This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
The Large Neutron Collider podcast is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the Large Neutron Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is the creepy and kooky Jonathan Strickland.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
I'm snappy.
And happy.
And I got Uncle Fester's haircut. Before we get into this, though, Ariel, I have a question for you. Now, Ariel, my question for you is, can you tell me about one of your favorite movie theater experiences? I'm sure you've got lots. You don't have to tell me your most favorite, but tell me about a movie theater experience that you thought was particularly fun and special.
It's when you and I went to go watch the preview of Scott Pilgrim with our respective partners. And then some of the crew and cast were there, like Edgar Wright and Jason Schwartzman, and I think Michael Cera and maybe a couple others who.
Yeah, Michael Cera was there.
Didn't stick in my head as much as the people that I already knew, that now I know better, were there doing a Q&A afterwards. It was just such a fun experience, and like, it's just got some cool stories that maybe not everybody knows still about the production. And I love watching movies for the story, but I also love watching movies to glean like how people act and different techniques they use and production details. And so like just the whole kit and caboodle is very interesting to me. And so that was a really wonderful experience. What about you?
As I recall, Schwartzman shared with us at that experience that he acted his scenes wearing ladies' underwear.
Yeah, and then that his pants split and everybody found out later on because it was like a character, like something he did in his mind, like this is something the character would do, so he did it, which is hilarious. Plus, the movie was a lot of fun.
Yes. that movie, and it was the best crowd to see it in, right? Because you were in a crowd of people who were determined to have a good time. Those are really the experiences I think of. You know, I also got to do a very similar thing when Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg and Nick Frost came to town to promote Hot Fuzz. So I saw Hot Fuzz in a very similar way to Scott Pilgrim. So those are very special events. The one that leaps to my mind, though, is when Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, premiered. There was a premiere in Atlanta, not like a premiere with any of the stars there or anything, but rather one of Atlanta's old movie houses, which no longer exists. It was torn down, was the first to show it. And my family, you know, I grew up an hour away from downtown Atlanta, but we made the trip down to Atlanta because my parents, obviously big science fiction fans, Tybalt also big science fiction fan. Yep. And then we went to this theater to watch it, and they even played a cartoon ahead of time. They played a Disney cartoon. It was a Goofy hockey team cartoon, which was everyone loved. The entire crowd was totally into the movie. Everyone was laughing at all the jokes. Everyone cheered at the music. It was just such a wonderful group positive experience. Those are the things I miss the most about movie theaters. I don't miss the situations where you go and, you know, there are people who are talking or texting on their phones through the whole thing. I don't like any of that, obviously. But when you are in a crowd of people who are invested in what they're watching and the movie is good, that's also important, or the movie is entertaining, doesn't have to be good, but it's entertaining.
Yeah,
it's a great experience.
I mean, I definitely get it there. And like, there's a difference too, because I've been to opening night movies where people talk or they gasp or they laugh all at the same things, right? Because you're all seeing it for the first time. Nothing's been ruined yet. That happens less likely now. And that is amazing. And then like, I went to Deadpool 2 once. I went to a movie tavern and it was opening weekend. And I had a couple sitting behind me drunk off their butts, just talking about not movie stuff through the entire thing. Like, I have gotten less patient with people talking in movies over the years. So I definitely like those big group where you know the entire audience is there for the same reason you are and not just, let's go see a movie. Not that that's a bad reason to see a movie as someone who's in the industry.
Not necessarily a bad reason to go see a movie, except for the fact that, you know, if it's down to how should we spend our time? I don't know. Let's go see a movie. And you're there with a crowd that's really like invested, it does make you feel very much out of place.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. I will say the one time I didn't mind talking during a movie is my husband and I went to see The Martian, and we did like one of those big AMC chair things where like, I'm not getting paid to say AMC, but okay. They had like the chairs that had like the Dolby Surround in the headrests, and like it kind of shook the seat. And so at like the really pivotal like the 4X moments
kind of stuff.
Yeah. Like, you know, so I'm, as things are taking off and landing on Mars, like I'm shaking, and it's very like, it helps you really invest in what's going on and kind of puts you in that place. But there was a little girl sitting next to us asking her dad science questions about the movie through the entire movie. And you can't be mad at that. Like, yeah, no. You don't want someone talking, but it's so adorable. And she's so interested that you have to love it.
For me, it was when Rebecca and I went to go see the movie Up in the theater. Aww. And the first 10 minutes destroyed us. Anyone who's seen Up knows what I'm talking about. The first 10 minutes of Up was like, it was like it was genetically engineered to break us psychologically. And I remember distinctly sitting there, like holding back, just racking sobs. And the little girl sitting next to my wife said, "Mommy, the people next to me are crying." And I'm like, "You just don't get it, but you will."
Oh, don't. Hopefully not for a long time.
I wasn't angry. I was more like, it almost made us start laughing, but you know, yeah, we were still kind of emotionally traumatized by Pixar. Thanks a lot. We might be talking a little bit more about Pixar a bit later in this episode.
Yes, if we can get through this discussion topic. I've got one more movie experience that you reminded me of with that little girl. I went to watch Raiders of the Lost Ark at like, maybe you were there, I don't know, at one of those like flashback weekend nights at the movie theater. This little, couldn't be more than like 5-year-old boy and his 3-year-old sister were there. And he was dressed up like Indiana Jones with his like little canteen. And he was super into playing Indiana Jones. He would drink out of his canteen and go, "I need to get more water," and then like leave and then like coming back. And so like he and his sister gave like Statler and Waldorf level hilarious comedy through the entire movie. And it was super adorable because they were super into it. Like she at one point, Indy and Marianne Ravenwood? Is she the in Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yes. Yeah.
Kiss, and the little 3-year-old girl goes, awkward. it destroyed me. And we all died. So like, yeah. Oh, so I guess either like cool things where like I know everybody in the crowd is a geek or into it as much as I am. And then like kids enjoying the movies and discovering that wonder. That's yeah. To sum up.
Agreed. Great, great discussion. Now let us move on to some news. And the first one is something that I thought was really cool. Actually, Rebecca pointed this out to me. I wouldn't have known about this news if it hadn't been for her. And that is, we knew that Netflix is producing a series about Wednesday Addams, apparently kind of like a supernatural detective series where Wednesday is the lead. We now know that Christina Ricci, who played Wednesday in The Addams Family and Addams Family Values, has been cast in a role. Obviously not Wednesday, but a role in that series. And I just thought, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, my guess, maybe she's a teacher.
I'm hoping whomever she's playing is exactly the opposite of Wednesday, and she's kind of like one of those vapid characters that we saw in Addams Family Values, because that would be amazing. First of all, I know that Christina Ricci can play whatever she likes. And yeah. She's great.
She's very talented.
But and she tends to play pretty edgy, kind of dark characters, but I would love to see her play against type.
I mean, I feel like in The Matrix Resurrections, whatever this latest one was, she played somebody outside of type, but it was also super brief. There is rumor that she was brought on to replace Thor Birch.
Yes, who left the project for reasons unknown, at least to us. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I am color me curious. I don't know if I'm going to dig it, because sometimes these things, it feels like they're just cashing in on nostalgia, but I'm willing to give it a shot.
They're going to have to find a real good balance between nostalgia and going too dark for modern sake.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like Addams Family could at least imply super, super dark stuff, but it did it with such kind of panache and humor that, you know, you just went with it, right? Like it didn't phase you, even though if you really sit there and think about the things that are being said and depicted, you're like, no, this in any other context would be absolutely horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be like Shining level horrifying. The Shining level horrifying.
Ah, a segue.
Whee!
Explain yourself and pray make it improbable.
So Ben Stiller, who I'm guessing most people know as Zoolander, he is in talks to play Jack Torrance, who is like the lead character in The Shining, for a stage adaptation in the West End in England.
Yes, which is in London,
yeah.
For those who don't know where the West End is.
Yeah.
This story really perplexes me. So first of all, it's going to be an adaptation not of the film version of The Shining, which was Stanley Kubrick's project that ended up taking a different path than the novel. Like if you've read Stephen King's book and then you saw Stanley Kubrick's film, you would see where the connective tissue is, but you would say, yeah, I mean, that was a very loose adaptation when you get down to it. There was a more faithful adaptation in a made-for-TV miniseries with Steven Weber that is the less said about, the better, because it was terrible. but the stage adaptation is supposed to, like that miniseries, is supposed to follow the book more closely and not so much the movie. I don't know how I feel about that. I personally think Kubrick's film is pure genius, and I think the book is good. But I've seen quote-unquote faithful adaptations of that book, and they don't do much for me. But who knows? Maybe the live stage element really will change things. I'm also, like, my mind boggles at what kind of effects they're going to pull off for that theatrical experience.
I mean, the article on Slash Film says that, you know, it's not the first horror adaptation to make it to the stage. And I am iffy on... I'm glad that they're going from the book version, because I'm honestly iffy on movies going to stage. There's only a few that have really captured me. We've talked about it before. Groundhog Day, Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice has amazing effects. Like, amazing stagecraft. And so probably they'll pull a little bit from that hat to get off some of the same effects. If they can do Beetlejuice on stage, they can do The Shining. I wish I could go to London to watch this, because not all of Ben Stiller's comedy strikes me correctly, although I do like some of it. I did like Zoolander, and I like parts of Dodgeball. And I know he can play like a charming yet angry character, because that's what he plays in a lot of his comedy. But like, he also does some great serious stuff that gets overlooked. He's done work on Broadway. He's a director on Severance, which I haven't watched and didn't know until today. It was a sci-fi show. I'm super interested to see how it goes. I kind of hope it goes well, because I want it to come to Broadway so I can potentially watch it. Maybe that'll be my first viewing of The Shining.
I certainly hope it goes better than the stage adaptation of Misery that had Bruce Willis in it. But, you know.
Was that really a thing?
Well. Oh, yeah. No, that was really a thing.
Oh, dear.
I'll tell you about it after the show.
Okay.
But we're going to move on to our final little story for this segment, which is that a company called Merlin Entertainments, which makes amusement park attractions, has secured the intellectual property rights to create Jumanji-themed amusement park rides.
Woo!
So now you, too, can fear that you will be stuck in jungle for the next 40 years.
Listen, as scary and as dangerous as Jumanji is, like, people forget that because it's so engaging, both the Robin Williams version and the Rock Kevin Hart version. You watch the movie going, that would be a lot of fun to be a part of.
I mean, I made the joke, but I mean, like, Jurassic Park is monumentally more dangerous than the Jumanji films because there's a higher death count.
Yeah.
And yet there are plenty of amusement park rides that are modeled after Jurassic Park. So,
and they're fun. But yeah. But I would also say Jurassic Park is geared a little bit more towards adults than Jumanji is. Ever so slightly.
And we don't really know anything more about that, like where these amusement park rides might end up. I mean, it really just ends up being which parks partner with Merlin Entertainments to build out that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it could mean that we'll have some Jumanji themed attractions before too long.
I will say that I hope that they do not end up at Madame Tussauds wax house, which Merlin also owns. And I guess they could fit into Legoland, but I would hope they would not be Lego versions of Jumanji, because that you lose something. You lose something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, before we lose anything, Ariel, I think we need to go take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a couple more news items to cover, and then we're going to talk about that Pixar thing I was mentioning earlier. But first, we're going to take this quick break.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Okay, we're back, and we had a creepy first segment, and now we have a creepy second segment. It did not work as well as
we can thank Ariel for that.
Yeah, for the creepy second segment?
Well, for both segments, really, because, I did a couple of the news stories that we did in the first one.
we're both to blame, Jonathan.
Yeah, yeah. Well, first one is that you pulled up a featurette on the upcoming sure-to-be blockbuster smash hit Morbius, the movie I keep forgetting is a thing.
Me too.
And apparently, I love how you titled the news item, too, that apparently this featurette is to remind us it is, in fact, a thing. Easy to forget when Sony keeps moving the premiere date around.
Yes, but we are going to, well, I say this, in theory, we are going to get it April 1st. So next week, potentially? Yes. Yeah, I know, Sean. Like, that might just be a huge joke on us, and I guess we'll see. The thing, like, that they were hoping would get everybody in this little featurette, because it doesn't honestly show that much new or engaging material that makes me go, oh, I want to see this more than I did before. It's Jared Leto talking kind of around the 30-second featurette saying, hey, the multiverse has been open, as if they're implying that Sony was not going to have character crossovers.
Yeah. Well, and we were talking before we started recording that one of the issues I have anyway is I suspect that for the Sony Marvel movies, you're not going to see a whole lot of crossover from the MCU Marvel movies. Like, I don't expect that we're going to see characters from the MCU pop up in Sony films that frequently, if at all, and vice versa, with the possible exception of Spider-Man, who's kind of the one element that ties these two parallel Marvel universes together. To me, it's a weird thing to think about. I don't think we're going to see, say, Venom show up in an MCU movie. And the big reason for that is, again, Spider-Man is like the connective tissue. Mm-hmm. And Spider-Man in the cinematic universes doesn't have a direct connection to Venom, right? Like, in the comics, Venom starts off as a symbiote that bonds with Spider-Man, and that's why Venom looks the way he does in the comic books.
Spider-Man 3 with Tobey Maguire.
Right, but that's old. We're talking about new movies.
Yes, but now the old is new because they brought Tobey Maguire into this latest Spider-Man movie. That's not a spoiler.
Wait, what? Some of us haven't seen No Way Home yet.
Shoot, did I really just spoil that for you?
I mean, I knew that Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire.
I thought that was no longer a spoiler. I'm sorry, we can cut that out.
It's not really a spoiler. I'm just being grouchy because I still haven't seen the movie.
Look, you've bought the movie. You could watch it digitally right now. But I understand.
I'd have to buy it digitally too. Like, that's the problem is that. So I bought the Blu-ray for Spider-Man No Way Home because I still haven't seen it. And at the time when I bought it, there was no pre-order option for a digital version. So I just thought, oh, I'll just buy it. So I'll get it the day it releases on Blu-ray. That day is not until the middle of April. So if I want to watch it, I have to pay it again.
I genuinely apologize if I have spoiled that moment for anybody who has not seen the movie yet, because I realize not everybody can go to the movie theaters. I just figured it was everywhere on the internet and no one could have missed it by this point.
No, it's true. I've seen multiple references to it. I am being a grouchy puss for no good reason.
I'm not saying that Venom was in the movie. I'm just saying because Tobey Maguire was, again, sorry, everybody, now that I'm doubling down, it does open that door. But you're right. In the MCU Sony joint pictures, prior to now, Venom's not a thing. I think it could be interesting for Venom to come in. Honestly, Morbius, also a Marvel character, really hasn't had much crossover outside of Spider-Man either. He almost made a cameo in Blade, apparently, but which would make sense because Blade is a vampire hunter, and
that is one example I could imagine, right? Where when we finally get the MCU Blade movie, for Morbius to have even just a cameo in that would not be surprising to me. Mm-hmm. It would seem like a wasted opportunity if they didn't do it, unless, of course, the Morbius movie is a total flop. If the film flops and the MCU would rather just not acknowledge it, I could understand that too.
Yeah. I mean, Sony and MCU have both said recently that they are going to continue to play nice together and are excited about collaborations. So I'm excited to see what that might bring about. I love the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies, and so I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. But this whole, the multiverse is open, whatever, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the danger there is to say that the multiverse being a thing gives an excuse to do any story whatsoever, because that very quickly can wear out its welcome. Yeah. Something else that can wear out its welcome is excessive marketing.
Yes. Yes. Like we've been getting for Moon Knight. I don't know, it's not as pervasive as the marketing for Eternals was, Moon Knight being a TV show with Oscar Isaac that's coming out on Disney Plus, kind of a darker, according to some of these clips that I have watched, and I'm not going to spoil what's in them, a darker show for sure, which we already knew. But yeah, they keep releasing every few days another clip from the show. And to me, they are things that, while they don't necessarily hold context without the rest of the show, I feel like are pivotal moments that have now been spoiled for me.
See, and I have refused to watch those. I've seen them pop up in my suggested videos feed, but same with Eternals. I didn't watch them for that. And I try to avoid those. I get that it's Disney kind of taking this blanket marketing approach in order to raise awareness and excitement for series, but for someone like me, who I'm kind of bought in on the MCU already to the largest extent. I mean, mm-hmm. not everything that's come out in the MCU has excited me, but I'm pretty much all in at this point. I'm going to go see it. So I have purposefully avoided it because I still want to be surprised at certain points while I watch the series. And I, like you were saying, I get the feeling that the more of those featurettes that should pop up, the fewer of those little moments of delight you're going to have.
Yeah. What I will say, and this won't spoil anything, I promise, and if it does, we'll cut it out, is that one of the little featurette clips felt very in line with more in line with something that came over from Netflix, and one of the clips felt more in line with any of the other Disney Plus Marvel television shows, and so I'm really curious to see how they marry them. Especially since in all of the clips, the CGI is just not that impressive to me.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the case with a lot of the Disney Plus series, right? That the effects are a pretty big step down from what you would see in the cinematic, which, I mean, you understand, mm-hmm. obviously the series are not going to have the same budget as a big ticket movie project, but It still kind of pulls you out of the moment when you can sort of see, it's like being at a puppet show and suddenly all you can see are the strings.
Yeah. I mean, that being said, it didn't bother me in Loki. I thought Loki, Loki also had some really amazing camera work that took place for some of its effects that just was so breathtaking. And it didn't bother me in WandaVision because they also used a lot of practical effects to get the style of like how the old TV shows did effects, right?
Well, the thing that bothered me in Loki was the fact that they shot at the Georgia Renaissance Festival, but they moved some of the shop signs around, and that just really irritated me.
You know what got me? First of all, okay. First of all, I might have already gone off about this, and if so, I'm sorry. They shot at the Georgia Renaissance Festival, which I was an actor at for, I think, like 10, 11 years. I did not get an audition for it. And then the woman who did it, and I realized this is scripting, totally acted out of character for an actual Renaissance Festival performer. Like, it bothered me more than any LARPing scene in Hawkeye, which I also did not get an audition for.
At least the Renaissance Fair, from what I could tell, was supposed to be taking place in a different part of the world, so we know that it's not the Georgia Festival because we don't put up with that crap.
Yes. Well, yes.
That was the let's spend a couple of minutes now. We just got a couple left. But I wanted to quickly talk about Turning Red, which is the new Pixar film.
Which didn't get a ton of marketing.
It did not. You know, I got a little bit of it, and I was anticipating it as I was waiting for it to come out on Disney Plus. And when I watched it, I was delighted. It follows a young Canadian Chinese girl as she turns 13. And it's, you know, it's a not at all subtle tale that's dealing with maturity, and you know, there's a whole thing about the mother misinterpreting what's going on with the character getting her first period, and it's a lot of stuff that I think that for people of a certain persuasion had trouble connecting with. I'm saying like straight white dudes, because there was this famous straight white dude who wrote a review that was like, I can't feel any connection to this character. And my response was, literally every other piece of media is pretty much geared for you.
Yes.
You don't have to connect to everything. Back the heck off. Meanwhile, I thought it was a lot of fun. But you said that, you know, for the most part, you felt the same, but you had a couple of other thoughts too.
Yeah. So first of all, it was a really interesting art style. It had some of the most beautiful CGI I've ever seen, along with some what I can only equate to almost like Wallace and Gromit level cutesy character design. It was
especially the eyes whenever they would get excited.
The eyes, and then the mouth kind of had like the rounded corners like Wallace and Gromit. Not as pronounced.
Yeah.
Which if you aren't familiar with Wallace and Gromit, it's a delightful claymation series. You should watch it. But I thought it was delightful. The first 10 minutes had me cackling because boy, did I relate to that growing up. I love how the movie deals with things like periods because character does get her period. Spoilers. You know, so they it's the first movie I've seen Disney movie, really any kids movie where they've put pads into the movie. That isn't like an edgier teen drama. Obviously, there are some that are, but you know, like Pixar, Disney has never shown that. I do like the story of like kids, the struggle of like being a kid and trying to find your. And I feel like this crosses whatever gender. Every child grows up trying to figure out who they are and what they like, and that doesn't always mesh with the parents. And if you love your parents, then you know you're worried about hurting them because your viewpoints are different. So all of that I thought was great. The issue I had with it, and maybe this is just an archive of my upbringing, is that, and I have the same issue with The Little Mermaid, is that you have this child who's rebellious to find their own way. That's great. That's fine. Who reconciles with their parents at the end, but there is absolutely no like consequence or acknowledgement of the wrongdoing for that. And like, I get when you're a teenager, you do things, you sneak out of the house. You know, not that I ever did, Mom. I know you listen. you know, but you do things to test your boundaries, and that's fine. Usually there are consequences. And I feel like 13 is, there were some times where the kid would be like, I'm 13 and I'm doing this. And I'm like, 13 is maybe at 16, I would think it was okay. At 13, I still feel like there should be a little bit more of a consequence for some of the things the kid was doing, because at 13, you're still pretty much a kid. Like, you think you're an adult.
I agree with that mostly, but I mean, I give a lot of leeway to films, because generally speaking, you know, a lot of the movies I love involve things that happen where at the resolution of the film, everything seems to be okay. But if you thought about it for more than 5 seconds, you'd say, you know, there's a lot that's going to need to be addressed because of this. Heck, I mean, like the Marvel films are great examples, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're entire cities that are destroyed where they kind of reference it in future films, but they don't really reconcile with it. So I gave a lot of forgiveness for that. Really curious before we wrap up and move on to our next segment. Did you have a favorite character? Because I definitely did.
Yes, it was Priya. Priya is kind of like the deadpan April Ludgate, if you're familiar with Parks and Rec, sort of best friend who's totally there.
I thought she was channeling Rosa from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yes, that too. Like at first I thought it might have been the same voice actress, but it's not, because she just did Mirabelle in Encanto.
There is a lot of overlap thematically with Encanto. Like this, the whole like perfect child kind of thing. My favorite character was Abby, because that manic energy, the little short one who was just like super like aggressive. Mm-hmm. I thought she made me laugh every time she was on screen. So big Abby stan right here.
She was funny. Like I said, super relatable. And, you know, looking back at 13, I felt all of those things, you know. That being said, like, if you're a parent with a kid who is not yet 13, maybe watch it first, because every child is different and not every child might know that, you know, these are boundaries that you maybe shouldn't cross, even though this character crossed it and was fine. But that's, you know, that's why you watch movies with your kids and you explain, you talk about it, right? That's part of the point, is to open discussion. So,
I mean, like, I grew up in the 80s and I turned out
beautifully. Okay-ish. You turned out beautifully, Jonathan.
But if you look at the entertainment that I had access to in the 80s, whoo boy, it's a miracle.
Yeah, but you also had an open dialogue with your parents.
I did. We have a miracle to bring to you right after this break as we get into some mashup material.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
I might have oversold that, Ariel.
I mean, possibly true. Possibly true. I liked it. It invoked like physical movement in me, which I have not had enough of today, even though we're an audio platform and people can't see me do my cool, like, interpretive speaking.
No, but if you watch the videos that we did as Large Neutron Collider from many years ago, I guarantee you will see a very similar gesture to what Ariel just did in one of them.
Yes, definitely. I miss those videos. I kind of want to redo them. If people want to see videos, they should write us and tell us. We'll tell you how at the end of the episode. Don't know if we'll be able to, but we'll definitely consider it.
We'll darn well want to.
Yes. We are mashing up a couple of things that we haven't talked about, and that is King Kong and The Godfather.
Now, King Kong, we kind of came to because we know that there's going to be a Godzilla versus Kong sequel that's going to go into production this year, shooting in Australia. I never saw the first one, so I mean, I'm just assuming that there wasn't a definitive end where one of them ate the other one.
No, there was not. Sorry. Again, spoilers. It's been out a long time. And it's out on HBO Max, so if you have HBO Max, you can watch it. No, there was not a definitive ending. There never is in a monster movie. Even if it's a definitive ending, it's not a definitive ending. Like,
no, you gotta leave room for sequels.
Yeah, and The Godfather, because the day that this episode comes out, The Godfather turns 50 years old.
Doesn't look a day over 35.
No. No, it's still a decent mob movie.
Decent.
It's a good mob movie.
It's what it is. It's a masterpiece. Godfather is a look. It's Godfather so and Godfather long. 2 are practically untouchable.
What about Godfather 3?
Mafia movies. That is a totally touchable mafia movie.
Okay, so I like it. It's long. I don't need to watch it all the time. Do we want to explain what these movies are for people who are not familiar?
I mean, okay, so King Kong, it's about a giant ape that is captured on an island called Skull Island, brought over to New York, climbs the Empire State Building, falls off, dies. The end. Turns out Beauty killed the Beast. Godfather, film about a family called the Corleone family in New York, one of the five families of the fictional versions of the five families, representing five different crime families in New York. The title character Godfather is played by Marlon Brando. He's Vito Corleone, and he leads the Corleone family. His son, Michael, his youngest son, is back from World War II. And then the story pretty much follows that family's journey as they get into conflicts with one of the other the five families. And it's a lot of mob stuff. And a lot of the famous lines that you hear quoted all the time, even if you've never seen The Godfather, chances are you've heard the lines, things like take the gun, leave the gun, take the cannolis, or he's sleeping with the fishes, or,
I'm going to give you an offer you can't refuse.
My daughter's wedding.
Yeah. I'm going to give you an offer you can't refuse.
Yeah.
Revenge is a dish best served
all
cold.
All these... that's not that, but yes, a lot of the famous quotes you've heard, probably came from The Godfather, not things like that, or we're going to need a bigger boat. Not all quotes came from The Godfather.
I thought Revenge was a dish best served cold was from The Godfather.
Oh my gosh. So that quote, we're not going to go into it, but that quote is very old and has been used in tons of stuff from Star Trek pretty much everything you can imagine. But we're going to now mash up King Kong and The Godfather. And believe it or not, mine is actually a little short this time.
Mine's a little
I know
long.
I say that a lot. Okay, good. Do you want me to go first this time?
Sure.
Okay, mine is called, and I'll be shocked if yours is called something else, The Kong Father. All right. Michael Corleone has a problem. See, his father, Kong the King Corleone, is the head of an Italian crime syndicate. He's also a 30-foot-tall giant ape. So, as you can imagine, Michael's life hasn't been what you would call typical. He's the youngest of Kong's sons, the other being Sonny and Fredo. And he's also got a sister named Connie. And it's at Connie's wedding where we pick up on our story, where Michael is introducing his girlfriend Kay to the rest of his family while trying to keep the family business on the down low. Meanwhile, folks are seeking counsel with the Kong father. And there's this awesome scene where we see this guy asking Kong Corleone to step in and exact justice on a couple of terrible dudes who wronged this guy in a way that's legit awful. I'm not going to go into it. But Corleone says... Now, we see in subtitles that what that means is... You come on the day of that my daughter is to be married. Whatever have I done to you for you to treat me so disrespectfully? If you had come to me in friendship, I would have thrown these guys from the Empire State Building. But then guys like that would fear you. And one day, and this day may never come, you will do a service for me. But until that day, accept this gesture as a gift on my daughter's wedding day. And it's iconic, and you barely notice that Kong Corleone is like all folded up so he can fit into this room in the first place, because he's a 30-foot-tall giant ape. Anyway, we find out that there's a rival crime family that has invited Kong Corleone to join a narcotics ring. But Kong... He's a little cautious. He doesn't like it when he's, you know, hit with narcotics. I mean, that's how he ended up in America in the first place. And he decides he's going to turn down the opportunity, but then he becomes a target. Literally, one day, he's out on the streets of New York. He's minding his own business, causing traffic jams everywhere as he lumbers down the street, and he's suddenly attacked. A bunch of biplanes armed with machine guns zoom in and start shooting him up a bunch of times. So Kong survives this attack, but he's whisked off to a really big veterinary clinic. Meanwhile, Sonny takes charge of the Corleone family, and Michael, determined to avenge his pop, agrees to put a hit on the guys that the Corleones have identified as being behind that attack. Immediately after that hit, Michael has to flee the United States, and so he seeks the relative safety of Skull Island, the homeland of his father. Kong slowly recovers in the veterinary clinic, but he worries about the safety of his family as hostilities between the various crime families in New York have really escalated, and Sonny, his eldest son, tends to be pretty hot-headed. Meanwhile, the Corleones have to worry about the Maranzanos, the Tattaglias, the dinosaurs, and the giant chattering insects, because the crime families in New York are pretty weird. Sonny, enraged at the attempt on his father's life, sends capo Peter Clemenza out on this mission to deal with a particularly nasty dinosaur that was involved in the shooting. And so Clemenza and his associate Rocco, and then the dinosaur known as Gattosaurus, go for a ride with Fay Wray there, who's also in the car, but she's asleep. Clemenza has the Gattosaurus drive the car out to the countryside, and then Rocco whacks the dinosaur, shoots him in the back of the head 3 times, and then Clemenza says to Rocco the famous line, "Leave the gun, take the bananas." Anyway, we follow Michael a bit as he settles in on Skull Island, but always has to, you know, dodge various assassination attempts and the occasional delusional Hollywood director who comes to the island for some reason. Meanwhile, back home, Sonny gets ambushed by some of those giant insects and then he dies. And Kong, wishing to avoid extinction, makes a deal with the other families. And in return, Michael's safety is assured and he comes back to the U.S. So then the Kong father decides, you know what, I can handle this. And he goes ape, literally, on the other 4 families. I mean, he starts throwing around soldiers and capos left and right and center. He bats airplanes out of the sky. He pounds the other families into submission until ultimately he has reasserted his position as the true Kong father of New York. And we conclude in a scene where Kong Corleone is relaxing in an orange grove, and he's picking up entire trees and just shoving them into his mouth, and then he suffers a massive heart attack. I mean, it would have to be a massive heart attack because, he's huge, but it's a fatal heart attack. He dies. And Michael becomes the new Kong father, which requires him to both grow about 24 feet taller and sprout fur all over his body. But Michael, being an obedient son, does it. And so we end the movie. We see Michael, the new Kong father, as he begins to receive visitors, all of whom carry enormous crates of bananas in tribute, and a gorgeous blonde woman dressed in black quietly enters the room. Cut to credits.
Oh, I absolutely loved it. That was wonderful. I would watch it.
Sucker.
What? No, I like
nothing.
I like bananas better than cannolis. It totally hit home.
Okay, I feel exactly the opposite. I love cannolis, and I am not a banana fan.
I like cannolis, but I love bananas.
Okay, well, Ariel, I am curious to hear your treatment of this pairing.
Okay, yes. So originally, I had picked the title The Kong Father. But I do have a backup title. I just need to be very, very clear as we go through my mashup of what I am saying. This is King Don, D-O-N. That's it.
tread carefully,
because
Ariel.
I had the door open today and I went for a walk yesterday, so I'm a little bit stuffy and I'm kind of accidentally putting other letters on the end of my words sometimes. Okay. So our stories are a little similar, but also completely not. Our story starts out on a boat where famed director and cinematographer Carl Denham has assembled a team of movie makers to travel to a place few know of. Cranio Isola, or Skull Island in English, an uncharted island off the coast of Italy, to find a mysterious identity called the Dawn. Two of said movie makers that Carl recruited were Connie Ann Adams, a lovely Italian-American blonde actress, and Jack Fontaine, a scriptwriter or deckhand or singer. He never really gives a straight answer as to who he is. Upon landing on the island, they see the locals of the island giving offerings to a statue of what the group can only assume is the Dawn, while asking for requests. The film crew decide not to interfere as the sun sets and set up camp out of sight from the local village. When the crew awakes from what they thought was a peaceful night, they discover that Connie, the actress, has been abducted, and in her place is the head of a stegosaurus in her bed. The crew have many questions on finding this out, but push them aside, realizing first and foremost that the important thing is to find and rescue Connie. When they find her, she is in the village being offered as the Bride of Dawn to appease the being of legend. And that's when they see him, a giant, hulking, 25-foot-tall man in a sharp suit with slicked back hair appearing out of the jungle. He sees Connie, his new bride, and the village is about to marry him when he notices the film crew running up and he grabs Connie and runs off into the jungle. Carl, the director, was prepared to fight the beast, however, and follows close behind, screaming to him to stop. When the Dawn reaches an impasse, he stops and mumbles something to the crew. The crew think they almost understand it. Like, was it English? Surely not. So they pause and they say what? The Dawn repeats what it said. But the crew still does not understand. What? They say again. And this time, the Dawn signs at them, a communication method that he learned from the locals who also couldn't understand him. Carl, tired of the back and forth, orders his crew to shoot the Dawn with tranquilizer darts, and the Dawn falls to the ground signing, "And this on the day of my wedding," dropping Connie, the Bride of the Dawn, in the process. Now, having the legendary Dawn knocked out, but unable to continue the movie, Carl, the director, decides to take the Dawn back to the mainland. They escape the locals and do just that. Along the way, Connie and the Dawn bond. She finds out that he isn't, like, that bad. I mean, he's bad, but he isn't that bad? Or so she thought. And that is until they get to the mainland, when Carl and the rest realize something they hadn't before. The Dawn was a former mob boss, Vito Corleone, known as the Godfather, who had escaped an assassination attempt on him from the Five Families, well, four if you exclude his own, by escaping Italy. And when that didn't work, he went to Cranio Island and was assumed dead. As soon as he arrived on the island, however, the bizarre magical power that kept, you know, like stegosauruses alive, mixed with the immense family power Vito had, and combined and mutated him into a giant beast version of himself. The problem is, now that he was back on the mainland, the families were after him again, eager to finish off the job they had started. As soon as the Don sees the first hit coming at him, he grabs Connie to protect her and runs off, being chased up the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Surrounded and nowhere to go, he puts Connie on the top of the building. He is promptly gunned down and falls onto the local pizzeria next door. He mumbles as he dies, "I guess it'd be an offer I couldn't refuse." But only Connie understood and grieved for him. Years later, newspapers and historians have changed the story to say it was an ape because they thought the real story would be too hard to believe. The end.
'Twas beauty that killed the Don.
Yes, Don.
That was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
And weird. One of the weirdest mashups we've done so far, I think.
I told you.
Which is odd because it's odd because you know, we've picked more far out films to serve as mashup fodder. So obviously, if you have your own thoughts about how to mash up King Kong and The Godfather and create some sort of monstrosity the way we did, we want to hear about it. The best way to do that is to send us an email. The address is lnc@iheartmedia.com.
Yes, you can also reach out to us on social media just to say hi or give us a quick thought. We really love hearing from you. On Twitter, we are lnc_podcast. And on Instagram and Facebook, we are Large Nerd Drunk Collider. Yeah, we want to hear from you. So does Tybalt.
Yes, we do. Tybalt wants to hear from you, too. Yeah. So until next time, I am Jonathan Bark Bark Strickland.
And I am Ariel the Ape Caston.
The Large Neutron Collider is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by Ariel Caston. Jonathan Strickland is the executive producer. The show is produced, edited, and published by Tari Harrison. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet. Finance smarter.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.